Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and star of 17 episodes of the series Going to Extremes as Colin Midford, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite forever ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/the Delta Flyers.
Wow.
Ooh, Going to Extremes. Is this the Jamaica show?
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Is that the Jamaica
show? It's the Jamaica show.
It is the Jamaica show.
I'm surprised. I always thought we did 22 episodes. I thought we did a full traditional order.
Unless your Wikipedia is faulty. Is your Wikipedia faulty?
I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
It's a weirdly obscure show. I feel like we did more than 17 episodes. I mean, I was in all the episodes. I wasn't not
You shot
in.
The pilot. You flew out to Jamaica. You shot the whole first season. And that was it, right?
And that was then, it. Yeah, it was definitely only one season.
Right.
But I didn't know it was a short season. 17
you thought it was,
is less than the normal.
Yes, the normal order. So,
wow.
Do you think they sort of hurried it up once they knew they weren't going to get picked up and they ended it early? Or do you think
that's possible? That's possible because the more I think about it, I feel like we did go home at Christmas and we didn't come back.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
So that could have been 17 episodes before, you know, with the pilot plus 16.
Yep.
By Christmas, and then we didn't come back to do the back, which would have been five.
The back quarter or whatever, right?
Yeah. Usually they refer to it, usually you do 12 episodes and then you pick up the back nine or 13 episodes and you pick up the back nine.
Yeah.
They always talk about the back nine pickup.
Yeah.
But that would have been a back five pickup.
Yeah.
That's weird.
That is a little weird.
It's kind of math, and math is boring, and I just want to apologize to all of you podcast listeners for doing math when you should be entertained by interesting stories and not doing homework.
Yes.
And having to show your work. So
yes.
Okay.
Having to show your work. Boy, that's bringing back memories right now.
Remember that?
Yes.
You had to answer the questions and show your work. If you didn't show your work on your homework, you didn't get credit for it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, so are you ready?
What is this?
This is Someone to Watch Over Me, your huge directorial.
I forgot. See, I come into these blindly because I intentionally, and I know you mentioned that last week.
Yeah.
But I forgot because I try not to have any preconceived notion. So, oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to guess the director on this is RDM himself, you. Who do you think wrote this? Do you recall who wrote this? Maybe you might. You might remember this.
Oh, wow. That's horrible that I can't remember it. I want to say...
You're going to have to apologize to the writer of this episode.
I know. I feel like this might have been a Brian Fuller episode, but he wrote...
Okay, that's very possible.
Didn't he write last week's?
Yeah, he was the story. He was the story. Yes, he sold the story, and he was one of the three people that contributed to the actual template. Yeah.
So I doubt they would give him two in a row. Mm. So that doesn't seem right. But the tone of this feels very Brian Fuller with the light comedy and the romance side of things. I'm going to stick with Brian on this for some weird
reason. Okay, I'll go with Braga Manosky, the duo. So. That's good, I guess.
That's a good combo, actually. That's a really good, because of the Seven Doctor story.
Yeah.
That's a really good combo. Okay.
It's very possible.
You're probably going to win that one. Wow. Someone to Watch Over Me.
Do you remember guest stars? Do you remember any guest stars?
Well, I remember my friend David Burke was in it.
So he's in it. Okay.
I had a couple of friends in it. This is my third episode.
Yes.
My first episode, I was terrified and obsessed and didn't sleep. My second episode, I felt like was a bit of a whiff. Not that I hated my direction, but it was just kind of pedestrian. It was fine.
Yeah.
It was not an inspiring script to me. I struggled to get inspired by that script and figure it out. It just didn't
grab me. That's half the battle, isn't it? If you're not inspired or passionate about the script, it's very difficult to turn out a really good product.
So, yeah, but it's part of the job as a director to find something.
Yes.
And I did find something, but it was more actor oriented maybe than visual. So anyway, I felt like when I read this one, I do remember feeling like really connected, much more confident, and I could see the tone, which we didn't normally do, that sort of that rom-com tone. We didn't normally do it. And to me, that is my sweet spot. Like, I love that kind of tone with some comedy, some of the rom-com vibes in there, you know, highs and lows of all that. So I was like, I know who needs to do this episode. It needs to be David Burke, my friend. He's going to be perfect. Brian McNamara was another one that was a guest star in it. I remember.
So you suggested their names and they got cast basically. Yeah. So you had some power there.
Yeah. They were both friends of mine, actors I'd worked with before. And I knew their ability to deliver on sort of the rom-com and the comedy side of things, which was great.
Well, I don't know if you recall this, but in an earlier Doctor episode that we reviewed, I talked about Charlie Russo applauding, like giving Bob Picardo a standing ovation. And I think I was wrong. I think it was this episode.
Really?
I don't think, because I think I made that comment on Darkling or something like that, but that doesn't seem right. I think this was probably the one that
Charlie got a Russo, standing.
Well, Charlie. Because Charlie Russo was always critical of performances of whatever. He never really
He was tough on people.
He was very tough. He never really said like great job. And I just remember
it was very sarcastic. He would be like, he'd try to undermine the whole thing all the time by making sarcastic jokes.
And that's why it stood out that he was so, you know, giving applause basically, or giving kudos to Bob over an episode. Cause I remember walking into the soundstage and they're saying, okay, well, that's a wrap. And then, you know, just seeing Charles sit there and it wasn't sarcasm. It was genuine, genuine admiration. And it was like, whoa. And on top of that, were you on time on this ep in terms of delivering the ep on time? Were you behind? Or do you recall any of that at this point?
I don't.
Okay. Because typically, if their crew did grumble, it was because, or rumble, is because an long episode hours. It was long hours. So I thought maybe this was an episode that you also, not only did you deliver,
I feel like our
superior
hours were,
directorial.
Yeah, I think we delivered, we finished on time.
Within the right time.
Generally. I think it was really all around a success.
Okay.
The experience was good. Yeah.
Great.
My memory. I can't wait. I haven't seen it in a long, long time.
Yeah. So I can't. Same here. So I look forward to seeing that as well. All right. So everyone, we will be right back after we refresh our memories with this episode, Someone to Watch Over Me, the big Robbie Duncan McNeil piece de resistance. He directed this and he loves this and he was good at it. We'll be right back. Stay tuned for your bonus material, Patreon patrons. All right, we are back from Robbie's tour de force as a director. We're so excited.
That was fun.
Yeah, it was really, really, really fun. Okay, let's just jump right into this. Let's do our little poetry synopsis to start off with.
Okay. And
here is my haiku for Someone to Watch Over Me. Seven likes to watch. Doc suggests she try dating. Toman indulges.
Ooh, nice.
Thank you.
You started off in a similar way as my limericks.
Oh,
so,
good.
Yeah.
Okay, did you use the same? Let me hear.
Well,
let me hear.
Seven watching, you know, liking to watch. Okay, similar idea.
Okay,
here we go with our limerick for Someone to Watch Over Me.
Lay it on me.
It was a little something like this. Seven studies how Tom and B'Elanna have fun. The doc says he'll teach her dating 101. Seven can really sing, but she won't have a fling. Doc's unrequited love feelings suck a whole ton.
Oh, man, that last
verse.
Suck a whole ton. We got ton in there. Ton does rhyme
ton,
with fun.
101.
So 101. Yeah, good job.
Got some good rhymes. All right. So Michael Taylor wrote this.
Yeah, but Story by Braga. So I got Story, part of it right.
Yeah, Story by Brandon Braga. Right.
Yeah.
Michael Taylor. It yeah. was a, such a clever script. It was really well, well written.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by some newbie, Robert Duncan McNeil.
Let's talk about our guest stars.
Guest stars. Here we go. Scott Thompson. I said yes. Brad. I couldn't remember his name. There's another Kids in the Hall that's Brad. But anyway, Scott Thompson plays Toman.
Yeah.
So he is most known for his Kids in the Hall work. Brain yeah. Candy was the movie that came out in 1996 that their comedy improv troupe, Kids in the Hall, did. Yeah. And then they ended up doing their series.
Yeah.
But his first guest star appearance, he had a couple uncredited, probably he was an extra.
Okay.
In some movies or something.
Okay.
But the first credited job that I could find was a TV series, a Canadian series called Street Legal back in 1987. That was his first job that he's credited for. Yep.
No, that's Megan's birth year.
That's Scott Thompson, 1987.
Right. Okay.
He was wonderful, by the way. I loved working with him. He was so funny.
Such a great performance. Really,
really was. Good. Mm-hmm. Next, we have Ian Abercrombie, who plays the Abbot.
That's the Abbot. Mm. Okay.
Now, I forgot that Ian was in this episode, but Ian was a friend of mine as well.
So you got him cast as well, basically.
I did. I forgot. I remember on this episode okay. going, I am going to get people that I know and love.
Yes. Yes.
And Ian Abercrombie, who comes back in season 6 in Spirit Folk.
He
does make an appearance, yeah. a different character. But Ian Abercrombie, I did a play with him called Child's Play.
Okay.
It's one of the ways that I know Brian McNamara, who's also in this episode. We have the same connection.
Yeah.
But Ian was so good to me when I took over for Brian McNamara in a play.
Okay.
So two of the people in this cast
are from that play.
From that one play.
What was the play called?
It was called Child's Play. It was
Child's
at the Coast
Play.
Coast okay. Playhouse. It was a commercial production of this revival of a play that they were hoping to either take to Broadway, or there was some high hopes for it. Brian had started in the play and then got the lead role in this movie, Arachnophobia.
Okay.
And so he had to suddenly leave. He had a couple of weeks to learn the role. It was the one of the lead roles, and it was a great play. So anyway, Ian Abercrombie,
mm-hmm.
Ian died in 2012. I do remember when he passed away. He was, I think he was 77 or 78 years old.
Yeah.
He made, so during World War II, during the Blitz in England, he started performing, I guess, and he learned how to dance or something and made his living as a dancer for a long time. And won all kinds of awards. I don't know if it was ballroom dancing.
Okay.
I think it might have been ballroom type dancing, but it might have been West End kind of musical theater stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, came out to California to pursue his dreams of an actor in the late 70s, early 80s. And his first job was Poltergeist, the movie Poltergeist, 1982.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
Very famous film.
Yes. Wow. David Burke plays Stephen Price.
Mm-hmm.
David Burke is one of my closest friends in the world. I've known David since 1990, probably. We did a Broadway play together called 6 Degrees of Separation. David came in halfway through that run on Broadway. He took over for Evan Handler.
Mm-hmm.
But David's awesome. He's a wonderful actor.
And who does he play in this? Is he Chapman?
Stephen Price. He's the very first. He's the holodeck date that the doctor says, go try to talk to that guy.
Right. Okay. And that's David Burke.
That's David Burke.
Okay. And my autocorrect changed it to Burn. So it says Burn Burke. In mine.
It's Burke.
Okay. Burke. Yep.
Exactly.
Okay.
His first job was right around the time we were doing 6 Degrees of Separation on Broadway,
right.
1991.
Yeah.
He did an episode of Law and Order in New York City. So he was probably back when we were doing the play.
Yeah.
And he got that first on camera job.
Nice.
And then lastly is Brian McNamara, who plays Chapman.
Yeah.
As I said, I met Brian during Child's Play. I took over for him. So I got to see him do the role for a couple of weeks every night while I was rehearsing. Mm-hmm. His first job was in 1984, the movie The Flamingo Kid.
With, I remember that movie.
Matt Dillon, I think, was in it, wasn't he?
That's right.
The flamingo kid. He's like the pool boy.
Yeah, this is back east, I think. Was it in Jersey or it was someplace in the...
Something like that. It was like a coast, summer beach club.
That's right.
I think Matt Dillon was like a pool boy.
He was, but he was from the wrong side of the tracks. You know?
Yeah,
he was
exactly.
trying to make his way. Yes.
That's Brian's first job was in that movie.
Wow, so. I love that.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, because you know, as far as guest stars are concerned, I would say the prior episode where every guest star knocked it out of the park would be Distant Origin, when we come across the dinosaur aliens. I thought all
everybody
were amazing.
Was strong.
And yeah. I'm going to say this one, all these guest stars knocked it out of the park. So did you get a pat on the back from the writer producers in terms of,
I feel like I had to push a little on, I had to push a little on Scott Thompson.
Okay.
Because he was a little broader and more comedic than most of our writer producers were used to.
Okay.
And then with everybody else, Ian Abercrombie came in through casting and I focused in on him and said, Ian's the guy.
Yeah.
After that, David and Brian were recommendations for me.
Okay.
That I said, you know, these guys have to come in. These are good actors. Put them on the list. Get them. And then I pushed for them. And I think everybody was on board with David and Brian and Ian. I think it was, for the most part, I think it was Scott, the comedy actor. Mm-hmm. And I think we had looked at some other comedy actors and I think they didn't give good auditions. And that's why Rick Berman was nervous. He was like, if we go too comedic, it's not going to be like, they just have to keep it simple. Like all our Star Trek, play it straight and it'll be funny. So there was a lot of anxiety, but I thought Scott did a great job.
He really did. And plus he's drunk for most of the episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
So you kind of got to play it a little bit broader or bigger than
normal,
right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And cool. he and Ethan Phillips together, those, you know, I remember Ethan being very happy that there's this clown kind of comic, because that's Ethan's, you know, jam. Yeah. He loves that.
Definitely. Yeah.
All right. So the first scene, we're in the mess hall and we see Seven looking through a crowd or something. You can't really tell what it is. And then it rack focuses to Paris and we realize he's talking to B'Elanna. And then this camera sort of drifts around a slow 180 as they talk. And then eventually B'Elanna says, "Hey, do you see that? She's staring at us." I really was very happy with that opening shot. Like kind of rack focus was not something we did a lot to tell stories on our show. It was, it was used now and then, maybe Rick Colby did sometimes, but those long lens rack focus moments were a little less common on our shows. I was really happy. I was very happy the way that opening shot turned out.
Yeah. I was also happy that your opening line is about Harry. It wasn't a, you were teaching me how to drive stick shift. And
teaching you how to drive a stick shift and you I crashed into a
burrito stand. Basically, I took out a Chipotle is what happened. So
yeah, exactly.
So we learned that, which is
what
a very
were we doing by a burrito stand? Were we, was it like a surf shack? Were we down at the Baja in Mexico? Like,
that's what I'm thinking.
Something
we must have been on PCH or something like that.
Okay.
You know, Pacific Coast Highway.
To Topanga or Malibu.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
driving along the coast. That makes sense.
B'Elanna says in the scene, she's like, well, what about me? Maybe you could teach me how to drive. And my first thought was like, oh my God, I want to see the scenes of Tom trying to teach B'Elanna how to drive a stick shift. That would be amazing. That would be some comedy.
It would be comedy. It'd be frustrating.
Intense.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's the one thing that every spouse knows is to stay away from trying to teach the other spouse how to do anything, whether
with a car,
with a car, golf clubs, doesn't matter, you know, whatever it is. Yeah. It's always going to end up bad.
B'Elanna, then she notices Seven creeping around, kind of staring at them. And she's like, why is she staring at us? Tom's like, you know, don't worry. She's just doing work. I'm sure it's nothing.
Yeah.
And then Neelix comes over. He offers some dessert. It's a cheese or something that he's preparing. And I think B'Elanna tastes it and says, oh, it's kind of bland. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh, just kind of bland. It needs to be really bland. Yeah. For the Cotty. It's like they can't have too much flavor.
Yeah. They can't take anything.
It's only a little bland. It's got to be totally bland. B'Elanna then says, she's still staring at it. Like B'Elanna can't take it anymore. So yeah. She goes over, she's like, hey, why are you creeping on us? And Seven says that she's been observing and studying human mating rituals,
mm-hmm.
and taking notes. And B'Elanna is pissed. Tom comes over. Neelix comes over. B'Elanna grabs the pad. She reads Seven's log where they were, you know, their arguments that they had. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, she says she took notes on their last coupling or their last intimate evening. And B'Elanna is furious. She's like, that's crossed the line.
Yeah, but she's mad. But then, you know, Seven has that great comeback. She goes, I don't think anyone in that section didn't. Everyone in that section heard everything. So it's sort of like, you know, it's a common knowledge that you guys are getting it on because you're very loud, evidently.
I guess so.
I just want to go back to the cheese for a second. Do you remember Roxanne Dawson was a huge lover of cheese?
Was she really? I don't remember that. Oh,
my goodness. She ate cheese all the time. And this in her trailer, she had cheese. It was just, cheese was a big deal. So that scene when he's handing her cheese, I thought, oh, she must have been in heaven. The actress herself.
I wonder,
herself.
It didn't really look like cheese, though. It looked like tofu to me. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe.
Okay. All right. We have a ship shot next. Yep. Voyager's orbiting Cotty, I guess this.
Yeah, we actually see the home planet the Cotty colony planet, whatever it is. So we see that.
We see that, then we go to the ready room and we see Janeway kind of dressed up in her formal captain's uniform, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Talking to Seven.
She lost a pip, though.
She loses a pip. She's talking to Seven about all of the notes and, you know, hey, I heard there was a little altercation about your note taking. I loved her line, this is a starship, not a nature preserve.
Yeah.
Made me laugh. Good line, Michael Taylor.
Yeah. And also I like the way they both played it because it was very casual. You know, Janeway wasn't really that mad. She was just bringing it up and kind of giving her some guidance.
Yeah, giving her some guidance. Did you notice the mirror on her desk?
No.
She looks in a mirror that's like a tabletop mirror that's on her desk. I was like, when does she have a mirror? I guess she's getting, you know,
she's getting gussied up. Form. I get it. Yes.
But it just was weird to see this mirror in there. That's why she notices the pip is gone. And then she crawls under her desk. Great little. I love that kind of that kind of very relatable business. Agreed. That they gave her. Yeah. And then to ask Seven, hey, can you put this on for me? And it just was very domestic and very nice and warm. That was great.
I agree.
Ultimately, the captain says, hey, maybe you should consider dating. Like, so she gives her that advice.
My takeaway from that scene is Janeway asks Seven, why did you collect 30,000 gigaquads of data on the subject?
Yes.
That's a lot of info. She's really into it. So,
yeah. Corridor shot next.
Yep.
And I noticed this is a following. So the camera is behind all the actors trying to keep up with them as they rush off to the transporter room.
Not the way we typically do it.
Not the way we normally do it.
You chose to do it this way, I guess.
I did. Yeah. I was like, I like it. Hey, they're rushing. This will give us the sense that we're trying to catch them. There's a lot of energy.
Yes.
And I thought that was great.
I think that was a perfect choice.
I was glad to see that. She does reinforce here that the Cotty are very pure. She does not want to seem immoral to them.
Yes.
So is Neelix ready with everything to, you know, so they're going through the list of things, where he can do his prayers. He's got to do his prayers like 8 times a day or something. And so he's got a place set up for that. He's got bland food. He's totally prepared. Get to the transporter room. Two monks beam in. And this is where I saw Ian Abercrombie.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it was such a good man. He was a good man.
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten that he was in this episode. So that was, I put a heart on my notes. I'm like, Ian.
Yeah.
I love the makeup for these aliens, by the way.
I do like their makeup.
Yeah. The lobes, the big lobes and the hair kind of coming out. So it looks like in the transporter room, what's happening is Janeway and Tuvok are going to go down. Ambassador Toman, which is Scott Thompson. Ambassador Stoman, our very pious, bland ambassador, is going to stay with Neelix to get a tour. And Janeway and Tuvok are going to go down. And they're basically going to judge their character and see if we are worthy of receiving their minerals that we've asked them to, you know, if we could get some.
Yeah, and so, Janeway and Tuvok get these cool towels draped over them.
They do. By
Toman. That's kind of
Toman.
Cool.
Yeah. They get their formal towels and it's nice to have a towel. It's like when you go to a spa, you know, they give you a towel when you check in. This is nice.
Or like a bib.
Or a bib, exactly. So everybody's just head out from the transporter room. Next, we're in the corridor again, and Toman is being led by Neelix. Neelix is talking about the ship's systems, and maybe they'll start there.
Hey, we get another number.
Yeah.
We get another number. The crew of 146.
Oh, not again. No. Yes. Why do they keep doing that?
Yes. And he was going to take Tobin. I wrote Tobin in the beginning, but I realize it's not Tobin.
I thought it was Tobin too, because
it sounded like Tobin
when he said it with his accent. Yes. Ian's got a bit of an accent. It sounded like Tobin.
Yes, he did.
I did all the same thing.
So he's debriefing Toman, or he's briefing Toman on what's going on, the 411 for Voyager. Yep. And he decides that, okay, we have to head over to engineering. I want to take Toman over there. And Toman stops him. He stops and he says, you know what? I kind of want to try a Bajoran dish called Hosperot, which really, you look at Neelix's face and he's like, the eyebrows go up. He's like, Hosperot, very spicy. So to him, he's thinking this is gonna blow his taste buds out of the water here. I mean, this is not really what I thought he would ask for, but Neelix is trying to be, you know, accommodating. So he says, fine, we will go straight to the mess hall. So they do. They head straight to the mess hall.
Mm-hmm.
Now we do jump to sick bay. And
by the way, I think the Hosperot, as I remember, was literally something like a flour tortilla with some red bell peppers in it. Like that was it. It was pretty bland.
So the prop, it really wasn't spicy.
When the props guys made the Hosperot, it was like red bell pepper to look, I guess that looked spicy, and some flour tortilla wrapped up. That was
it. It was like a quesadilla with red bell peppers in it. Okay. All right.
Pretty bland.
Yes. We jumped to sick bay and now the doctor is sort of examining Seven.
He's giving her like a checkup, probably.
He's giving her a checkup, but he's also heard about what happened between Seven and B'Elanna. And I love that line when the doctor says, they say gossip travels faster than warp speed. And so I thought, well, that's pretty funny. Yeah, they got a little funny line in there. But the doctor,
well, even her line before, I didn't write it down, but my memory, her line before he brings up gossip, she says something like, information does travel very efficiently on this ship when people want to. Something like that.
Yes.
Yes.
Great teleplay by Michael Taylor.
Yeah, really funny.
Yeah, funny stuff. The doctor does suggest that Seven should try dating.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she's intrigued. She's like, all right, she's down for it. She's gonna go ahead and you know, give it a shot, basically.
And he's because he says, I'm going to be your teacher. Yep. Basically makes himself her educator on this.
Correct. Correct.
He's going to be her teacher. He's going to come up with lesson plans, which we have a lot of lesson plans.
Yep.
That come up in the thing. And he says, meet me in Holodeck 2.
That's right.
A couple, 2 hours.
Yep. So between that sick bay scene and Holodeck 2, we have another exterior shot of Voyager in orbit.
Do you remember his last line? By the way, his last line as he walks away to prepare for the first lesson.
No. What was it?
It made me laugh, but I'm like, whoa, that's
what he say.
You wouldn't write a line like that anymore. He goes, most women start dating a little younger than you, but better late than never.
Yeah, that wouldn't fly today.
I don't think any writer would write that line.
No.
But it was funny because it was so inappropriate. I laughed. Right. But Bob pulled it off. Anyway, yes. Time passes, we go to Holodeck 2.
We are Holodeck 2, and the doctor begins his presentation, which he has entitled Love Amid the Stars. Mm-hmm. And he starts showing different alien species and their mating rituals. He shows a Klingon, some Bolians, species 8472, which evidently have five sexes. I had no clue. Can you imagine the pronouns for a 8472?
Five sexes.
Five sexes.
I do remember when we shot this scene, there were no projections up there.
Yes.
You know, Bob Picardo was just pointing to thin air.
To nothing, exactly. Yeah.
And we had, I think we had staged some of the photos. So we could say like, oh, over here is going to be the girl. And over here, we had staged a couple.
Right.
So we knew what was going to go in there.
Yeah.
But when it got to the, when he says,
first contact, the chance encounter,
fortress
the
ovum, when he gets to
that one.
when it's the egg and the sperm attacking, and he says, and now fortress ovum
is besieged by countless little warriors.
And he's doing this.
He's doing all that. Yes.
Pointing with a, we didn't
you
know what
no,
it was going to be.
No clue so what it was going to look like.
I remember this conversation. I was like, we're going to have a, you know, a bunch of sperm out there and an egg, microscopic. We don't know exactly. So just do this everywhere because it'll cover the whole thing. But it was very funny.
I was wondering about his blocking, his physicality there. I'm like, what is he doing right now? And now it's because you guys had no image at that point.
We didn't know what it was going to be. No, so it's like, instead of pointing to one thing, just pretend it's everywhere. There's a million of them. And
well, he did exactly that for sure.
He did.
So Fortress Ovum, is the description of procreation, basically. But before that, he talks about first contact, the chance encounter, the formal introduction. So, you know, he goes through this step by step for her. Yep. And then he says, lesson two, encounter in a public place. So he tells her that she has to basically, you know, get wisdom or learn how to date by really trying to throwing her into the deep end of the pool.
Yep.
And so he recreates Chez Sandrine, your holodeck program.
Paris. He does. Holodeck. He says holo program Paris 3,
mm-hmm.
Chez Sandrine's. And
he takes a shot at Paris.
What did he say?
Yeah, he just talks about like how much time you spent there when you were in Starfleet Academy
funny.
And how it clearly must have affected your grades or something like that. Like he does another shot at Paris again.
Nice. So.
Yeah.
Nice doc.
The usual.
I thought the transition, because, you know, they're doing the slideshow and then you go from the slideshow right into Sandrine's in that same holodeck.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool. It was a very simple transition on the close up, started on the close up and then cut around to the wide shot, but it worked really nicely. Sometimes those trends. And again, I was learning a lot still as a director. And so to sort of plan for the flow of the way things would cut together and think about things that were simple and elegant. That one made me happy. I feel like, I was starting to get the hang of looking at the patterns of editing and things like that.
It was a smooth flow. And now he encourages her to go talk to one of the holo characters played by your friend, David Burke.
Yes.
Now, does he have a character name? I don't even know what his character name is. Cause he just says, go talk to him. And
I don't think so, because he's Stephen Price. He introduces himself.
Oh, he does say that. Okay.
He does. He says, hi, I'm Stephen Price.
Stephen Price. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is when you appear. So Paris comes in and he starts talking to the doctor. And basically, is this the scene? Is this the one where you felt like your acting was really, really on point?
Oh, by the way, what we were talking about earlier is not in this episode, the scene I was thinking of. I thought it was in this. But it must be later. We'll get to it someday.
Oh, okay. Well, this was a good
scene. It's a
scene
good
scene. For you. I did feel it was. And this is when the bet happens, the wager happens. Tom and Doc make this bet about whether or not Seven will show up to the ambassador's reception with a date. And
she's got to show up with a date.
And she's got to stay through the whole thing. Leave with the date.
Whole thing and leave with the same date without
and not
any
cause
drama.
Any drama.
Yep.
And the stakes are you're going to pull double shifts for a month, something like that. And then if you win, you get 1 month off, which is pretty good. I like that. It's a good deal.
It's a good deal. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty confident. Pretty confident about it. And then Seven comes over at this point and basically says she's mastered this exercise. She's done. She doesn't need to do this anymore, which is very
funny. Irrelevant.
It's irrelevant. Mm-hmm. We go to the mess hall next, and Neelix walks over from the kitchen, and we reveal that Tommen is there, and he has been eating a feast. It's just this long table filled with so much food.
Yes. What does that remind you of?
Some like, I don't know.
Okay. It's from the pilot episode when Neelix first comes on our ship. He's eating everything. He's got this whole huge layout of food. That. And yeah, so it just, to me, it was kind of funny. Passing the torch, sort of like, okay, Neelix went through this whole thing, and now Tommen's going through this whole thing.
That's
he's
right.
sampling
That's
everything. Right. And the Katarian pudding, he can't get enough of it. It's just so effervescent in his mouth. He loves it. And Neelix is like, wait a minute. I know you want to try more, but Torres, Balana has been waiting
Balana's
for half
waiting
an hour.
Engineering.
Yeah. Yeah. But before he can respond to that, he sees a female crew member. And I have to make a note here. I've never seen that background actor before that day or after that day. So I was like, oh, that's somebody new.
Yeah, it was probably some special cast or, a special background moment.
Yeah, special background person. And he sees her on the other side of the mess hall. And he starts talking about how the Kadi don't even mix genders in the workplace.
Yeah, men and women cannot work
together. They can't even work together. But he thought, wow, this could be kind of spicy. Then his alarm goes off, telling him that it's time for him to go through a prayer ceremony. And Neelix is like, prayer time. And he's like, I could do it later. He completely ignores it.
He's like, I want to skip it.
I'd rather look at the woman sitting across the way there. Yeah, I don't want to deal with this.
You notice when the alarm goes off?
Yeah.
I don't remember, but it looked like he just pulled up his string and like pressed as if there's a button on the string or something. I was like,
no,
where is the alarm? Like, is it? What?
Well, you
feels like there should have been a pendant.
Yeah, but you must have directed him on that, bud. Right?
It feels like an oversight. Like maybe we hadn't thought about it till we got in there and we're like, oh, shoot, we should have put a pin.
He's going to push his drawstring and it'll stop.
So it'll just be on this. It'll just be boop. Yeah.
Okay.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, because I didn't really notice that, I think you got away with it. So I think it was fine.
Okay, good. Good.
I don't think anyone's going to say anything about that. Okay. Do you have any other observations about this particular scene? Okay.
No, he's ready for dessert. And that's how we finish that scene.
Yep.
We go to Cargo Bay again. Now it's lesson three,
Cargo
getting
Bay
to
one.
Know you.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Getting to know you is the lesson.
The key to finding a compatible partner is learning how to share your interests and goals. And the whole dialogue between these two are hilarious. He's talking about hobbies. Like, what are your hobbies? Well, what do you do in your spare time? Seven's like, I regenerate. It's just like, okay.
Yeah.
What about your likes and dislikes? I dislike irrelevant conversations. Okay. Yes. Well, what about goals? And she's like, perfection. It's like, well, that might be good for yourself, but not for the other person.
Yeah.
And it's
very
just,
funny.
Every turn of the corner, you know, she's got to come back and the doctor is getting nowhere until he brings up music and she does see some type of relevance in music.
Yes,
right?
Some relevance with the mathematical properties of music.
Correct.
She says.
Correct.
So he has her sing a scale. Mm-hmm. He just comes up with a scale on the computer and she sings it. And he's like, Seven, you have a beautiful voice.
Yes.
Which is a lot to interpret from the quick scale that she's she basically went like la 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 la
la. He's like blown away,
amazing. Yeah, but it's cute. He's got a crush on her.
He does. Well, you don't know that until they actually sing it together. When they sing it together, I like how you shot that because they sang it together. And I don't know if the script said this or not, but at one point the doctor stops singing on a certain line. And that's when you realize he's got it bad for 7 minutes. Yeah. That's because he's
and he's sort of into the song. I wanted him to sort of get lost in the music.
He was
kind of in his own world. And then when he looks over, it takes his breath away for a second. And he's like, he forgets the words, and then he's got to catch back up.
Yes.
Yeah.
It for me, it read as, oh my gosh, I'm in love with her, is what I got from that. So,
it was a nice moment.
Yeah, it's a great moment because what was it? It wasn't a moment of him saying, I love you. It wasn't a moment of him looking at her like a certain way. Yeah. It was a moment of him stopping from the singing. And that is what translated that, or that is what communicated that to the audience. Yeah. And I thought it was great.
Wonderful. Yeah. We go to Astrometrics next. Harry's coming in. We see Harry for the first
18 minutes and 57 seconds into this episode. You finally see Harry. And I'm strolling. I got some pep in my step. I'm like, I just noticed that. I was like, wow,
this was a good scene, by the way. I enjoyed this scene. It was really good.
It was a good scene. You
come in for some data from the last two Astrometrics scans.
Yeah.
You see that the crew manifest is up in Astrometrics. You're like, what's that for? Mm-hmm. And she says, lesson 10, the first date. And Harry's like, what?
Huh?
Yeah. She says, I've selected the top two candidates.
I've narrowed it down to two. Yeah.
Narrowed it down to two. And you see him hopeful. I'm
like,
really?
And he has to like music or something. And I'm like, I play the clarinet.
I play the clarinet.
Like, you're not one of them, Ensign. I was like, oh, how painful was that?
It was funny,
Harry's
though.
Still good. It was funny. Harry's still into it. He's like, well, let me help you find the Mr. Wright.
Yeah.
He pops up one image, Ensign Bernowski, who we know as Carrie. That was Carrie that came on screen. And then Lieutenant Chapman is your buddy, who you get
Brian McNamara. Yeah,
Brian McNamara, and I like my delivery of like Chapman's a good guy. It was just was just like, all right, I approve of him. You know, he's fine. So good scene though. Good scene.
Yeah, it was a really good scene. Mm-hmm. We go from Harry's approval of Chapman to the Jefferies tube, and there he is fixing a relay in the Jefferies tube. He hears a noise. He thinks it's another crewman. And realizes that it's Seven.
Yeah. I got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
That wasn't a true Jeffrey. It was the junction.
Yes.
For the, what do you call that thing? That
when
you
kind
of walk up, it's a tunnel. No. What do you,
I remember shooting this right
the name
off
of that.
I don't know either. There's some ladders there and then you can go down a Jeffrey's tube.
You could choose to go because the Jeffrey's tube are usually horizontal, not vertical. He was standing in sort of one of those vertical sections where you, right? I don't even know what we call that. And I had no idea what to write on here. I just said in the work area.
Junction, Jeffrey's tube, junction.
Okay, it's a junction. Let's say it's junction. All right.
And I remember when I was blocking this and trying to figure out how to shoot it because, you know, at the end she does say, you know, something about drop tool can be a workplace hazard. Please be more careful next time.
Yeah.
I wanted the dropping of the tool for it to fall out away from his reach. And in a horizontal Jeffrey's tube, it wouldn't really be out of his reach.
Yeah.
So that's why we picked that, but we had to get a crane. We had to, it was a bit of a deal, but it gave us a cool opportunity for a reveal of Seven.
Yeah. It was wonderful. You know, she catches the tool that falls. I love it. Yeah. Yeah. Good job.
But it was a nice scene where she basically says, she requests that he join her for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, wait, what? And she goes, consumption of nutritional supplements. It's like, yeah, I know what dinner is. He's like, with you? And she goes, yes.
Yeah.
And then he's silent and she goes, state your response. State your response. And ultimately he's like, yeah, sure. Dinner with you. I'll see you there.
How awkward in her little
funny
board.
Scene.
Yeah. Very funny. Very funny.
Funny scene. Right. We go to sick bay.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. She pops in for a button of this, the end of this act, and is proud to announce to the doctor that she has a date.
Yeah,
and I like that shot. It was a nice Warner just pushing into the doctor's reaction to that. And again, I was really happy with the shots and the way that we staged these scenes.
Very, they all made sense. They flowed well. So good job on that. We have a bit of a passage of time still in sick bay and now Paris appears and the doctor is just gloating over Paris about Seven's upcoming date. And, you know, the takeaway from the scene is Paris ends up calling out the doc on his infatuation with Seven. Like, Paris can see it. Yeah. It's crystal clear.
The doc's because the doctor's listing all these amazing qualities. Because Paris is like, oh, she's going out with Chapman? Ha, forget it. Don't hold your breath.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, too nervous. That's not even
He's too nervous. He's going to run for his life from her. And the doctor's like, no, you don't know her. Like,
You don't know her how I know her.
Like how I know her. She's got an amazing voice, a beautiful singer, and so, you know, smart and intelligent and creative.
Oh,
and
God.
That's when Paris is like, I see.
I see what's going on. Yes.
We go to Cargo Bay next. Then the doc walks into Cargo Bay and says, you should be getting ready. Mm-hmm. Lesson 8, dress for success, he says.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of lesson numbers here.
He does. He lowers her hair.
I did notice her hair looked different. And then I was like, oh, yeah, because he's got to let her hair down.
Yeah.
And he has a very romantic sort of, you know, gentle, intimate kind of letting her hair down. And he's like, and shake it. And
When
he gets flustered.
Well, did you look at her look on her face when he lets her hair down? That's a very intimate moment to let another human being touch your hair like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And she kind of looks at him there's a bit of a coy,
like kind teasy, of flirty.
Yes. I was like, what is she doing? I that's what I'm looking at. I was a little shocked because clearly Seven doesn't have an infatuation with the doctor, but yet she played it with a little bit of flirtation there.
She did. Yeah. I noticed that too.
Yeah.
And it flusters him a bit, and he goes over to a console to pick out an outfit and show her some clothes. And she says at one point, she goes, well, I wouldn't even know how to wear these garments. And she says, here, help me. And she starts to take her clothes
off. Undress. Yes.
And he's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Nope, you'll figure it out. He's like,
he gets nervous and leaves.
He gets nervous and he backs out. I thought he was going to run into the doors.
That would have been awesome. He's walking backwards and hits the doors.
Yeah, but he's like, nope.
No.
Get dressed and you're going to have a great date. Right. We go to Sandrine's.
Which is where the date is happening. So
yes, that's cool. We kind of pan over off some people dancing.
Yeah.
And
the doctor's on the piano.
Doctor's on the piano. Chapman's waiting at the bar. And off his look, we cut over and reveal Seven's beautiful dress or cocktail dress. Mm-hmm. She joins him. You look beautiful. And her response is, thanks. You look beautiful,
too. Yeah. He didn't know how to take that, but it was a good interaction though, for sure.
They go to sit down at a table. He pulls a chair for her, but she just takes her own seat. And he's like, oh, well, okay. So clearly, like moment by moment, it's clear that she does not know how to date. He's very nervous. He tries to get the waiter's attention very kind of politely and very gently. And then Seven, you know, jumps up and says, server, report to the station. She like yells at him.
It's like the record, you know, goes off of it and everyone's quiet and listening. Yeah, exactly. Yell. I love it.
Then there's a little bit of a time passing.
Well, the food comes, right?
The food comes. And she's
were
confused.
Those real were those
they were
prop lobsters or real lobsters?
They were cold at this point, but they were real lobsters.
They were huge.
They were
those were really big lobsters.
And I remember we could only crack like two of them because we'd run out of lobsters. So we had to really think about how we covered the scene,
right?
So that we had enough lobster because I think we only had four total lobsters.
Okay. And then you had to film it so that it looked like it was flying onto his clothing.
Yes, exactly.
His face.
Tricky. You got to figure out what the order of shots you're shooting, because once you crack the lobster,
you can't go back and uncrack it.
Correct. So, chunks go all over Chapman when she cracks the lobster, because she doesn't know what to do with the lobster. So she looks over at Doctor and he like takes his hands, like break it in two. Yeah. So she just takes the whole thing, breaks it.
I thought she was going to like just bite into the exoskeleton of the lobster.
Yeah, I did
shell.
Too.
I was like, oh my God, does she bite into this? But no,
yeah.
She breaks it, gets all over Chapman.
Breaks it, gets over him. Then they decide to go dancing.
Yeah.
They stand up to dance. It's a little awkward at the start. And then she looks over and sees someone twirling their partner.
Yeah.
So she decides to twirl Chapman. And she basically tears a ligament in his shoulder. He's like, ah, he rips his shoulder off. The doctor jumps up. Doctor comes over, scans him and says, you're going to have to go to sick bay. You've torn a ligament.
But to be treated by Mr. Paris.
To be treated by Mr. Paris, but don't tell Tom about this. Seven wants to quit at this point.
Right.
Seven's like, Doc, I just tore his ligament and I ripped his arm off. I can't. Mm-hmm. This is not working. Mm-hmm. And the doctor's like, no, don't give up. And he gives her a pep talk. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment where she says, you know, I don't know how to talk to people. I mean, you and I speak directly and succinctly to each other. Like you and I know how to talk to each other.
Yeah.
So he really, you know, it's kind of feeding into his crush, all these little things.
Sure is. So the doctor decides to give lesson 35 to Seven, which is the dancing lesson, which, you know, mm-hmm. we have a reference to that earlier because she says to Chapman that she hasn't had lesson 35 yet, but now the doctor gives it to her. They get on the dance floor. The doctor reassures her, don't worry, I don't have ligaments that can tear. And they start dancing mm-hmm. to the tune of Someone to Watch Over Me.
Yes.
Very cute.
And it's very sweet. And it's a beautiful, beautiful little dance. It's very mm-hmm. tender and very warm.
Yeah.
And I do remember for some of these scenes, you know, on Voyager, we didn't have a Steadicam all the time. That mm-hmm. was, as a director, we were only budgeted to pay for that special equipment one day an episode, I think. So you had to pick it, or maybe one or two. Sometimes they go to two. But and so this was a day where I was like, I want a Steadicam. I want to be able to go just dance around with them and move and flow. And we really used it. But I do remember, like, you know.
So you only used it on the Doctor and Seven dancing, or did you also use it on Seven and Chapman dancing?
I think we may have used it on Seven and Chapman as well.
Mm-hmm.
And we use it in a number of other shots in that scene. Like, once you have the Steadicam for the day,
you want to use it as much as you can.
That's right. Use it.
Just for everyone listening or watching out there, you need to be certified to be, it's just not any camera operator that can do, operate a Steadicam. You must be a Steadicam operator trained because it's not the easiest thing to wield. You are in this harness type of contraption thing with a counterweight and it's cumbersome. It really is. And you have to have a lot of practice in it. So the minute that you were able to get that approved, I'm sure you used it as much as you could that day.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Toman is mm-hmm. sitting at the bar. We're still in the holodeck now, but with Neelix and Toman, Toman is sitting at the bar with a couple of beautiful women.
Yeah.
A Bolian woman. And another woman.
I just wrote two alien women.
Two alien women. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what the other woman was, but one was mm-hmm. a Bolian. His robe is now undone. His chest is exposed. He's drunk. Neelix is freaking out. He's trying to give him some coffee.
Right. Because he's got to get to the reception. The reception is happening.
The reception's going to start
now. Any minute now. Yeah.
And Toman's like, you know what? I don't think I'm going back to my colony. I'm going to stay. I like it here.
I'm going to stay here on Voyager.
Yes. So this is a big problem.
Yeah.
And now we cut to Astrometrics, I think.
Yes.
And the doctor comes in. Seven's working. And he asks Seven to accompany him to the reception.
Yeah. To join him.
Yeah.
At the ambassador's reception. And she agrees. She's like, okay. He's like, is this a date? He's like, well, I guess it is.
I suppose. And they go. It is a
and
date,
again, it feeds into the doctor's infatuation there.
Yeah.
We end up in mess hall and we start off with this scene in the corner where good old Tom Paris is telling these jokes to the
just
ambassador.
Rapid fire. Rapid fire jokes.
One-liners.
Like Ethan Phillips. That was what Ethan
this
Phillips
is what he would
do.
Yeah. You were basically you were doing your best Ethan Phillips impersonation in that corner.
Totally.
It was a good job. And Toman, drunk Toman, loves it. He loves every second of everything coming out of your mouth is making him crack up. And Neelix says, I think you probably need more coffee. So Toman agrees and Neelix is sent off to get more coffee, which is at which point Commander Chakotay stops Neelix, confronts him, and he says, this is good.
Is this the first time we've seen Chakotay this episode?
Is it?
We haven't been on the bridge.
Ooh.
I do not recall. Just an observation.
Yeah, maybe.
I think it may be the first time we saw Chakotay.
Yeah. Well, he confronts Neelix about how drunk the ambassador is. And Neelix is, he's flabbergasted. He's so flustered. He's like, okay, I understand. I know. And he knows, you know, the ambassador was his responsibility. So he's a little flabbergasted. And the doctor enters with Seven. And at this point, you hear
Paris comes over.
Yep. You, Paris comes over. But this is the point where you hear Scott yell out, or Toman yell out, "Where is that funny man?" Which then reminded me of that recording that he and Scott used to listen to, you know, little man,
oh, like, you know,
that little, those two drunk people, that conversation. So,
shut up, little man.
Yeah, shut up, little man. Yeah. So that reminded me of that when he's screaming, "Where is that funny man?" And when Toman walks over, this is the first time I realized he's wearing sandals. It's like Birkenstocks or something that he's got on his feet.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
I didn't even know that. So I was like, okay, first time seeing that. Mm-hmm. And Seven is prompted by the doctor to make a toast.
Make a toast.
Clearly, that's they've already been working.
Another this, lesson.
Yeah, another lesson. She gets up. She makes a wonderful toast. Toman pulls Neelix aside and says, "Who is that extraordinary female? I want to meet her." Neelix is just like, "Take a number." Take a number. Great dialogue by Michael Taylor here. And Paris tells the doctor that he wins, basically. He's like, "You know what? You win." And this is when Seven realizes that a wager has been made. And it's that can't buy me love moment when everyone realizes there's a bet. And not a good thing. Seven is mad. She's starting to leave the mess hall. She gets intercepted.
And Paris is going, "Look, it was all my idea." He's trying to protect the doctor.
He's trying to, but it doesn't work. Yeah. She's like, "No, I'm leaving." Toman intercepts her, gets in her way, propositions her.
Yeah.
"Want to go up to my quarters?" You know,
it's he's been studying human mating rituals. He's ready.
He's ready. She's grabbing her arm. She refuses. She basically says, "You know, if you don't let go, you're gonna lose that arm." And she, you know, pushes him past. And that's when Toman makes a scene.
Toman loses it. He's like, "I want another drink.
I'm the guest of honor here." And he's like, "I want a drink." And he passes out.
Collapses on the floor.
Good job passing
out. We're in trouble.
He did his own stunt.
falling down there.
Yeah.
Next scene, we're in sick bay and the doc's checking out Toman.
Yeah.
And we reveal here that the Cadi don't have certain enzymes in their system that can handle
that
synthahol.
The
molecules of synthahol.
Yeah.
Seven. And then he wakes up. And I love when he wakes up, he goes, "Oh, Seven of mine.
My note
Michael Taylor.
Yeah, the Cadi are basically like a lot of Asians, including myself. A lot of Asians lack the enzyme that breaks down alcohol. That's why.
Really?
Yes. When you're at a bar or you're at some type of social event, if you see an Asian person and their face is flush red, that's an allergic reaction to the alcohol.
Wow. And
so for me, so the more alcohol I drink, the more red it starts in my face and it just goes down my body. Like, you know,
wow.
If I have two beers, it goes down to my chest. Three beers, it goes all the way down where my entire body is
red.
And it's just an allergic reaction because a lot of it, not every Asian, but a lot of Asians lack that enzyme that breaks down alcohol.
That.
Yep. So there you go.
That's interesting. I wonder if that was part of the research or part of what they
could have been. Yeah.
You know, we're trying to, you know,
it could have been
here for the Cadi.
Yes, but Seven of Mine, such a funny line. He says another funny line after that too, besides Seven of Mine. So she suggests, well, first of all, Neelix is freaking out because Toman, he says, is going to be banished from the colony and the trade agreement's going to fall through. And so that when he regains consciousness to look at Seven, he says, "Seven of Mine." Seven then suggests using her nanoprobes to assimilate the synthahol molecules. And that's when Toman says, "Assimilate me."
That's right.
The doctor, and Seven go to a different part of sick bay to start.
They're like in the science lab or
science
whatever
part of
room
it. Yeah.
is over there. And they're alone. They're talking. He apologizes. He does. I really do. I truly enjoy your company. I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. And he says that they've become really good friends. But you can tell when he's saying it. He's like, friends? He literally even put a question mark at the end of it. She agrees with him. He goes, yes, we're more than colleagues. We're friends. Friends? And she's like, yes, friends.
Yes, friends. Yeah. So she leaves.
Doc goes into sick bay and asks Paris. He goes, hypothetically,
yes,
how would somebody proceed if they've developed romantic feeling for someone else? What should they hypothetically?
He's asking Paris for advice right here. Paris is like, the direct route.
Direct. That's right.
That's it.
Tell that person exactly how you feel.
Yeah. And Paris knows that hypothetically means him. He already knows this in this conversation.
And the doctor says, but what if the feelings aren't mutual? Mm. And Tom's advice is, well, that's the risk that you have to take.
Agreed.
Which I think is a good human piece of advice. It is very risky to put yourself out there romantically. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. But Tom knows that the doctor is talking about 7 of 9. And he reiterates his advice of just be direct. Just be honest with her.
Yeah.
Next, we go to a corridor.
Yeah.
We're in a corridor. Toman
and Neelix
really hungover. Toman and Neelix. Captain and the Abbot are going to be back on the ship any minute now. And I love how you can see the room spinning. He's like,
when they get in the transporter room and when they beam in, when Janeway, Tuvok and the Abbot beam in, I love when Ian Abercrombie says, you didn't indulge in any of their more colorful traditions. And then Scott Thompson's like, of course not. And his hair is sticking out.
It's all disheveled.
It's completely disheveled and it's sticking out. And I love it. Yeah, it was a great moment. But then
the Abbot basically says that's too bad.
Yeah, because you're supposed to.
You should have. You could have explored a little more. As long as you're not too excessive about it, you should have, they have a lot of interesting things.
Yes. Really good scene.
We go to Cargo Bay and we find the doctor. Looks like he's telling Seven.
We go to Cargo Bay 1 and we see Seven reach over for some roses that are on the ground.
Yeah, yes.
So she picks that up and then you kind of, I guess you pan over a bit and the reveal is the doctor walks in at that
point. Yep, the doctor comes in and he basically in this scene takes Paris's advice and tells her the truth.
Right.
He's pouring his heart out. He's saying, that how much he feels for her and how
when he's away from her, he feels, not complete, whole conversation.
It's very romantic. Yeah.
It is. And it looks like they're about to have a kiss. And then, of course, we realize it's just a holographic simulation.
There's a little beep, beep.
And then
Seven enters.
Real Seven. Yeah.
And she gives him an enhanced medical tricorder.
Yes, that she's enhanced.
She enhanced
the scanning resolution by 33% as a gift, correct?
As a gift, a thank you gift. She says, lesson 22, thanks for the memories.
Yeah.
Seven tells the doctor that she's looked through all the potential mates and she hasn't found anyone acceptable.
Right.
And that she no longer has a need for the doctor to help her with any of this dating lessons or anything.
But if she is to come across a candidate that could be the one, she will then come back to the doctor for more guidance, more lessons.
Yeah.
And then she says, tell me what you're going
to
tell me.
Yeah. Is there something you wanted to say to me?
Tell me. Yeah.
He can't. And we know what he wants to say to her.
He can't say it. He couldn't.
And
do it.
He simply says the last few days have been unforgettable. And then she walks away and he activates Holodeck Paris 3 program and we're back
in Paris 3.
Mm-hmm. Yep, back in Sandrine's and he steps over to the piano, sits down and plays someone to watch over me as he sings along.
He's singing the lyrics.
Yeah. Nice 360 shot, will say. Very well directed in this moment.
It was.
Very well directed.
It was very well directed. Steadicam.
It was nice.
Steadicam.
Steadicam 360.
Looked good.
Yeah.
Looked good, my friend.
There we go. Someone to watch over me. Uh-huh. You laughed, you cried.
What's your lesson? What's your lesson of the episode that you directed?
My lesson in this rewatch is relationships aren't easy. That's my lesson. Relationshipping is hard. It's hard. It's hard for ex-Borg. It's hard for holographic doctors. It's hard for humans. It's hard. It's hard work.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep.
Yeah, what about you?
My lesson is from the words of Bruce Arians, the former coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yes.
I'm bringing in sports ball into this. And he says, no biscuit, no risk it. No risk it, no biscuit. No risk it, no biscuit. So really, if you don't risk, if you don't take the risk, you're never going to get the just biscuit rewards.
You're never going to know if the love could be yours or not if you're not willing to risk it.
Sometimes you have to go out on a limb, and it's not it's not a safe thing to do. It's very scary, but sometimes you just got to go out on a limb and see what happens. Right.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health. A world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
My other lesson from this episode is there are five sexes with species 8472. What? That's my lesson.
My other lesson is seven of mine.
What's your rating?
I'm going to give this a 8.5.
Ooh, wow.
I'll go 8.5.
Very nice.
Yeah.
I'm giving it a 9.0.
Woo!
It's not my highest, but it's up there.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that the average captain and admiral rating is going to be about 8.9 or 8.8.
Yeah. I think it'll be 8.something. Well, let's see. Here we have it right here.
Let's see it.
The admiral and captain's average rating for someone to watch over me is 8.5.
Oh, wait a minute. That was my first. I was right on the money. I did not think I'd be the average. Oh my goodness.
Good. Mm-hmm. I went a little higher because I'm a little sentimental.
Well, you have to. It's your own thing. You're going to be proud of it. So
that was good. That was really fun.
But 8.5 means there are people that did rate this 9 point something, correct?
Yeah.
Because it's an average. So
yeah, that's true.
All right.
Really fun.
All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to our review, recap, and discussion of Someone to Watch Over Me. Join us next week when Robbie and I will be discussing an episode which has a very unique title, 11:59. Not a lot of episodes are titled by a time.
1 minute till midnight is what it sounds like.
That's right. Although, basically, or 1 minute to noon.
To noon, because we do use military time. So it should be 1 minute to high noon.
That's going to be our episode.
I'm very interested.
I am too. And for all of our wonderful Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material.